prayed yesterday on the need to help this session. Here we are. May we please switch our cellular phones off today so that they don't disturb us during the process. Please just switch off your cellular phone. Don't put it on silent. Switch it off. We are here to talk about compliance issues, so if you can just do that, just switch off. Secondly, we may need to be done by not later than half past 12. There is a meeting of the committee of chairpersons that starts at that time. That require some of us to be there, so without rushing the issues, we nonetheless need to take that into account. Yesterday, in our engagement with the accountants general, we looked at the 2013-2014 assessment of compliance with the PFNA, something that they do for us at the beginning of each year as per an old resolution of the committee. Since we know National Treasury has that responsibility to oversee the implementation of the Act. And part of the challenges that they raised it that they had to do with how supply chain issues still bedevil the public finance department. And when correctly so invited the office of the chief procurement officer to engage with us at the same time. Remember that sometimes, was it early this year or late last year, we met with the chief procurement officer to get a sense of what is happening, what is being done, and that. So today is a continuation of our yesterday's discussion, but now focusing on supply chain management through the work of the office of the chief procurement officer. As indicated yesterday, the chief procurement officer himself is not well enough to escape town. So we'll hand over to Mr. Guma to take us through his presentation, which is the report that subsequent to our meeting has been put by that office. And then we'll have the opportunity to engage thereafter. So I think make a presentation, and then in terms of our areas of need and focus, I think members will be able to direct you. May I hand over to you.
Chairperson and honourable members, thank you again for the opportunity to maybe share some of the insights on the procurement review with you. Yesterday we kind of started with a presentation on what the procurement review established, and I believe it would be useful maybe just to explain and give a little bit of insight of how the office arrived at these conclusions. The predicament with a generic presentation like this is that it probably does not acknowledge adequately that there's pockets of excellence. There's really institutions that do very well when it comes to procurement. We see innovative thinking, we see calculated risk. That's the kind of things that you would like to see in a modern professional public service. But then also we overwhelmingly see evidence that lack of planning, conceptual clarity of the most appropriate procurement modality, skills deficiency, lack of consequences for non-compliance, and just good old-fashioned productivity is probably lacking. And most worrying probably is the indirect cost of running a paper-based manual procurement process. It's with regret, Chairperson, that I have to report that based on a sample of about 100 tenders that we evaluated from the demand plan right through to the audit process, the bidding process included, that the current system is predominantly paper-based. With paper-based, I mean the following. If I would like to host a conference at the Sheraton Hotel, I merely invite a quotation at the Lord Nelson and probably at Mount Grace and make sure that those two quotations are more expensive than the one that I selected. I scan it into the technology of the department, whether it's SAP, Oracle, Logos, Hardcat, or any of the other 38 systems that government use. I will still comply because I have a minimum of 3 quotes, do a scoring, probably select the cheapest, and I've merely complied. I probably pay 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 times more. An electronic system would mean that there is transparency in the visibility of the processes. So this review attempts to, on a scientific basis, based on evidence, based on hard reviews of a sample, suggest what is the major breakdowns. Not speculate, not read in the media, not contemplate anecdotal evidence, but support all those findings of empirical evidence. Just to recap on yesterday, we decided when the OCPO was established to have a real, frank, and honest assessment of what's wrong with SEM. We touched yesterday on that it probably revealed that the role of procurement is not strategic at all. It's more of an administrative compliance function. The organizational structures and systems are not supportive of the demands of a modern public service. The roles of technical and political interfaces get very blurry during the procurement process. We believe that there is a serious capacity deficiency. And I believe it was another, the second or the third parliament, that our leadership asked the question, do you believe that you have the skills to implement the PFMA, the MFMA, to enable service delivery? That question still remains predominantly no. We have assessed the legislation, regulations, policies and procedures and found it hugely fragmented, confusing at the best day of the week, and not supportive to a modern, diversified procurement approach. What I mean in practical terms is if you build a nuclear reactor, a highway, stationary or school furniture, we use the same modalities. It's nonsensical that one would treat these kind of procurements in the same way, and it's really old-fashioned. We have not embraced supplier management well, and I believe that this year we appropriated 2 billion rand to fix RDP houses, which we already paid a lot of money for. Maybe if we manage our suppliers better, we would get better value for money. And it's a complex issue. Chairperson, I do not pretend for one moment that it is easy, but it's absolutely necessary that it needs to be done. We also believe that balance between social objectives and economic transformation vis-a-vis the price and quality of goods and services is out of sync at the moment, and that we will have to find better ways to articulate this in practice. Sir, I hope that the bulk of this presentation could rather form and focus on the positive things that we can do with little money, a lot of effort, and probably perseverance and persistence, so that when we appear before you next year this time around, it's not the same sad old story, there are clear signs that we have made inroads in reform. And lastly, I hope that we can touch a little base on the functions of the Chief Procurement Officer. On our next slide, this is probably best articulated in the first two chapters of the review. We believe that procurement, firstly and foremostly, must make sure that the right quality, at the right price, at the right time, per commodity type, must be delivered at the different interfaces of government. If you consider that we have between 35 and 40 different businesses, ranging from something as complicated as energy to something as vital as education, learning and teacher training materials, school nutrition programs, to something as overwhelming as eradicating the bucket system, and the housing backlog, I think members might agree with me that the service delivery objectives and smart ways to buy these commodities is extremely empowering to a accounting officer. So much so that emphasis between the link of a strategic plan, an annual performance plan, and a demand plan should not be negotiable. And a question that we had the opportunity to pose to about 150 of the HODs were, do you know who is your top 20 suppliers that helps you to deliver on mandate of your department? And mostly the answer was no, I don't know who's the top 20 suppliers, and I don't really have a strategy in my department how I manage them well. And we don't say that in an arrogant way, chairperson. We believe that the empowering tools to help an accounting officer, like management information, real-time information systems, has also not kept track with the demands, the rigorous demands of management. But it's pertinent that you know at least who is your top 20 suppliers and what do you buy from them, and have real and practical ways to make sure that these delivery standards happen according to plan. And a real example, a good example that had a lot of media coverage in the last month or two was the medicine stockouts. It is criminal to say to a patient who is in TB treatment, I'm out of medicine and come back in 2 weeks' time. These diseases, unfortunately, become resistant, and you cannot skip a single treatment. It's just a huge risk to the country if one has a resistant treatment like that. Now, the root cause of the medicine stockout was probably an international shortage of supplies, and it's important that we manage those top 20 suppliers. Secondly, honorable members, 500 billion rand per year for a number of years must register socio-economic and economical progress. And unfortunately, we don't see that progress. The evidence, the empirical evidence to that, sir, is that we have compared the supply database of government 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and now. And unfortunately, less than 1% of the suppliers, small business suppliers, registered 10 years ago are still on our databases. The procurement process does not help sustain small business. The reason for that is that the rotation system where a supplier is invited on a rotation basis probably result in a successful award once in 18 months. And for a small business, cash flows everything. One contract every now and then does not help to sustain business. It's also well documented, I believe, that the supply chain system works best if it is combined with other policy instruments, like, for instance, access capital, maybe interest-free loans or low-interest loans, grants through the industrialization program. The DBI has got many instruments that would help set up a small business to be ready to deliver on commodity types. And I believe through the review, which is dealt with in chapters 3 and 4 more extensively, that there's many opportunities we can optimize the performance. So that we can report maybe next year the impact on SMME, co-ops, small farmholder, township economies, business opportunities for women, young people, people with disabilities, and all the other social objectives that we really want to see flourish when we spend 500 billion rand a year through goods and services of government. The value for money aspect is difficult to quantify, and we struggle to express the sample plus the other empirical data at our disposal in terms of economy, efficiency and effectiveness, if that's our definition for value for money. And the concept of total cost of ownership is difficult when we want to say that we build schools to last us 100 years, and we need to factor into the equation the maintenance, the upkeep, so that we set the assets. We just do not have the luxury in our current economy and economic forecast to rebuild a school every 10 or 15 years or to spend a lot of money to patch up infrastructure that falls apart 2 years after we've paid for it. And the maintenance, refurbishment cost over the lifespan is a concept that's not well versed in government accounting, and I believe when the accountant general and departments will report back to this committee and you hear the sad story of the incompleteness of the asset register, it looks like a non-compliance item, but it really has a tremendous impact on service delivery. For instance, when we say that we want to, in the school acceleration program, school building and refurbishment program, our target is by 2016 to have eradicated all mud schools and tree schools. And there's about 400 of them left, I believe. When we say by 2020, each school must have a science lab. And by 2030, the plan indicates that there should be a library, an IT lab, and a science lab at every school and should be available for each learner to access. I think we've appropriated about 7 billion in the last 2 years or so additional for that program. We need to spend that asset, and it's just not good enough to say, oh, we don't know where's the asset, and the asset register is incomplete. From a procurement perspective, we want to know that that 7 billion was well spent and servicing the boys and girls that need to benefit from that in making a good education. I can therefore not overemphasize the link between strategic planning, annual performance plan, the demand plan, the procurement plan, and the accounts. At the moment, the Auditor General indicates to us that there's a 10% correlation between demand plans and actual execution. I mean, this basically means that when we say we will put a tender to the market in the first quarter, it's only 1 out of 10 of such tenders that actually is published. Now, if you're a small business person and you maybe need to build a business and you need to pay people, it's a common practice that your order book should be well in advance, be populated, and that you can schedule. So if only 10% of the possible tender opportunities are manifest in practice, I think a small business is already in trouble before it starts. Chairperson, we also touched base yesterday on the state of the current system. I wouldn't like to belabor that point too much. It's well documented in the review in chapters 2 to 7, actually up to 8, chapter 8 of this publication, where we say that the system is fragmented. There's too many practice notes, circulars, different acts, regulations, national, provincial sphere, construction industry, And it's really difficult for procurement officials and managers to identify the right rule with which to comply. Also, it kind of ridicules the science of smart procurement, where one must find an approach that's most suitable to that kind of commodity, like banks. There's four strong commercial banks. We put every department and province and municipalities through a banking tender every 5 years, and it's actually a lot of wasted energy going to that tender process. A smart procurement process would be rather to regulate banking costs for government, and it would also be irresponsible to put all money in one single bank. So commodity types where there's only four or five players, cell phones is another good example, there are only four. Is it really sensible to go through tendering processes for entities? Shouldn't we just maybe use tariff setting or reverse auctions for best quote of the day as a more efficient tool than the old-fashioned tender, the winner-takes-it-all kind of approach? High starter over is a problem. As we sit here, only two out of every three procurement posts at SMS level is filled. The turnover is less than 2 years. Director and up stays for 2 years, then they move. It's too hot. They can't deal with the pressure. Complexity is overwhelming. And the sheer volumes that go through the supply chain processes are some of the reasons cited why they don't last. It creates instability, and instability is not a friend of progress, especially when there's leadershiplessness in the procurement workforce. It's easy to dodge responsibilities, and unfortunately we think it has a negative impact on the productivity of supply chain officials. Then there's very little accountability. Whether I process one tender, 10 tenders or 50 tenders is of no consequence. And there's not good enough standards to measure the practitioner's productivity. Secondly, things like bribery, writing specifications for friends, manipulating tender scores, unfortunately, happen too often. We report on that in the infrastructure chapter, which is in chapter 4, where we use the World Cup experience of 130 tenders that resulted in collusion, representing about 47 billion rand. Those are only the ones where these firms confessed to their sins and paid a fine with the Competition Commission. And this is not my nephew. This is blue chip JSE listed companies, sir. I think I should just maybe quote the page for ease of your reference. It's listed in the 27, yes, where such a case study is listed in the infrastructure, and a bit more detail is also provided on page 19 of the review, with the heading at the top of the page saying collusion in tendering in World Cup stadia. Chairperson, it's a single illustration, but we have many of those every quarter. Many tenders that I can quote that we have dealt with in the last quarter along the same lines. Limited transparency is a problem. I'm not sure if members have opportunity to note what is the procurement plans of entities for this year. It's difficult to find that information. You need to search multiple websites, read the national papers, search the tender bulletins. visibility is difficult. And maybe we should consider if it wouldn't be appropriate, for instance, to table procurement plans with the appropriation so that one has a clear indication what is it the department will put through the procurement process. Chairperson, the number of deviations, extensions of contracts is problematic. The Treasury regulations make it clear that the preferred method would be to test the market, to attend the bid. But a high percentage of tenders go through extensions, deviations, and exemptions. And the reasons for that is listed on page 18 in the block in the middle. There's an absence of public notification of tenders. Tenders are just published, but only to a selected few. And so doing, we eliminate healthy competition. Then we find, unfortunately, that in many, many instances, the evaluation criteria change during the evaluation process. It's listed on page 18 of review in the block. The conflicts of interest are not declared. Currently, in the standard bidding document number 4, it's incumbent on a supplier to register if there's a conflict. So if Skalk Human's wife is tendering, it's permitted, but she has the obligation to register that her husband works at the National Treasury and is a public servant. If that tender is with the National Treasury and I'm involved in the adjudication, evaluation or spec, I should excuse myself. It is a non-issue. One shouldn't even apply a mind. It should be a default reaction. And that unfortunately doesn't happen. Political interference is unfortunately something that happens, especially at local government. We have many reports on that. Recommendations are ignored by the accounting officer, so it happens that we go through the process, a spec is drafted, the evaluation is taking place, adjudication is made, a recommendation is submitted to the accounting officer, but the recommendation is rejected. And the rules provide for that, sir. It is possible, but the regulation specs, then the reasons must be well documented. If it's in excess of R1 million, it needs to report it within 10 working days to the relevant Treasury or the National Treasury, as well as the Auditor General. And there are circumstances where, for instance, a supplier didn't perform well. Now, why would you throw good money after bad money? If a supplier didn't deliver acceptable service, it's the right thing for the accounting officer to reject that bid, and it's provided for in the Treasury regulations. The procedure would then be to document that and go to the second or the third bid that might be applicable. Manipulation of scores is a big problem. We have two scoring systems, actually three. Bids below R500,000 is treated on a quotation basis. Then bids between R500 and R1 million is treated on 80-20 principle, 80% being price, 20% being VBE scoring rates. And above R1 million, 90-10, 90% price, 10% VBE. Many times officials use the wrong formula, and I, for the life of me, cannot understand how one can confuse when do you use 80-20 and when do you not use 90-10. In fact, the Treasury issued a practice note to make it very clear. Maybe the confusion comes when you anticipate that the bid would be in the 80-20, but when the bids arrive, it's more expensive and the 90-10 would be applicable. Maybe the confusion comes when one supplier bids below 1 million and others above 1 million, but officials don't know how to treat that. And we have issued the instruction note and a step-by-step assessment what to do then. It should really not be complicated. Discretion used to draw tenders to more than one bidder. So my brother really had a tough time. I grew up in Rustenburg, and with the current sites, he's out of job. So I intended to give this thing to one person, and now that we adjudicate, we decide at the last moment, no, we will split the thing into two awards. It's manipulative, and it doesn't really help the economies of scale. And then detailed records of the tender disappear overnight. We then find the procurement papers and record keeping are shoddy. Chairperson, you've heard these stories year in and year out. I have witnessed the ruthlessness of which the honorable members hold accounting offices to account, even witnessed a tear or two on one or two occasions. But these are still basics, and I was hoping that the discussion that we could have today would be an increase in productivity, measures taken to ensure a good return on the investment that we make, maybe talking about performance indicators that you would hold valuable, things that we should measure. Maybe it would be more useful to report today the number of days it takes to award tenders. You might have been more interested in the number of tenders that we cancel and the reasons why we cancel them, but we're still talking about record keeping. That is something that I really think we should not entertain for much longer, and certainly as a treasury, we are taking bold steps to address them, and a few slides from now we will maybe share with the committee some thinking how we could address these things. The Chief Procurement Officer, sir, is worried about a few things and asked me to share them with you today. Mr. Brown, in his previous life, was responsible for intergovernmental relations, and I believe for 5 or 6 years he was the Deputy Director General responsible for IGR. And he brought me to my attention that for supply chain in that period, the audit outcomes have not improved. Audit outcome improvements happened in other compliance areas, not in supply chain. And I believe that the audit, accountant general yesterday alluded to the fact that the majority of non-compliance issues are still procurement related. And again, the honorable members, it is with regret that I report its basics. They reported yesterday, and I think we also quoted here, just want to get the right reference quickly. The findings is, for the life of me, I can't quickly find it. It's in the chapter 3. Where we try to report on what the most common areas of non-compliance. Remember, one non-compliance item is valid tax certificates. The treasury regulation make it clear that a bid without a valid tax certificate should not be considered. It's just the policy of this government that paying tax is the right thing to do, and we just don't do business with a person whose tax affairs are not in order. Then in terms of the triple PFA, if a valid BE certificate is not attached to the bid, that bid is not considered. We agreed as a nation that we embrace transformation, and the instrument that the triple PFA requires is a BE certificate. So if a supplier does not comply to that, then we don't do business with that company. But it has been totally contradictory that these two basic elements are the point of non-compliance that is the most predominant. The third one is declaration of local content. It still is government's opinion that to buy local is good for the economy, that it creates jobs, that it allows small companies to produce and manufacture and deliver services from our local resources. But suppliers do not submit these requirements. It's the standard bidding document number 6 that I'm referring to, where a supplier is requested to certify the percentage of local content. The process entails that a certificate from the SABS, South African Bureau for Standards, to certify the percentage of the product that is locally manufactured. These are the non-compliance issues with that is impacting most on that 80% findings. Mr. Brown, sir, and honorable members, is concerned that in the last 6 years, very little progress has been made in this area. We see a little bit of improvement 1 year and then a degradation a lot, but in the long run, we unfortunately have not seen enough improvement in this area. And we think we've got a solution that can help making that area a little easier for suppliers as well as for partners. Then the direct SEM work on this slide. Between the CIBD, the Construction and Industry Development Board regulations, the Treasury regulations, the local government regulations, and the other 80-odd acts that deal with some kind of procurement aspect, is just too fragmented. And we have reduced this into a more streamlined set of Treasury regulations. Hopefully that will come into effect on 1st of April 2016. Then the very nature of our business, honorable members, and when accounting officers come to your hearings, they might testify that all bids above R1 million come to their desk. And if you're the Director General of the Department of Rural Development, of Water and Sanitation, you're probably going to deal with between 8 and 15,000 bids for infrastructure. It's humanly impossible for a single official to deal with that kind of volumes. So unless there is a better delegation setup, accountability framework, it takes too long to get a bid published, evaluated, and awarded. The nature of this time constraint is that we work with paper. It's a memo with a bid specification, etc. And we've not leveraged on electronic means that can help us excel in this area. Thirdly, there's unfortunately lack of competency in specialist areas. I've mentioned yesterday, honorable member, that our infrastructure budget represents roughly R860 billion. We need experts in infrastructure that can deal quickly, efficiently, and arrive the first time with a specification. These things are usually complicated. Many of these tender events, engineers, quantity surveyors, and a host of other professionals spend quite a bit of time in assessing the specifications and making sure that they are, in fact, speaking to the real need. And then, sir, I think we also have a culture of woe. When we meet and we have opportunity as a national treasury to meet once a quarter with all treasuries, all national departments, and all of the non-delegated municipalities, we have 57 reasons why it can't be done and why we shouldn't move. Maybe the vision should be just strong enough for a yes, so that all the naysayers, the critics, and compliance-minded people could move with the system. And I would like to bring balance to that statement so that it doesn't appear if it's just sensationalism. In a chapter on capacity building, chapter 7, on page 51, we try to define what is the skill set that we need in a modern procurement operation. The skills for strategic sourcing, it's page 51, sir. 51. And it goes to page 53, where there's an assessment of the maturity level of supply chain in national, provincial, and local. It's based on the same principles as the financial management capability maturity model that the Accountant General uses, but it links and maps to the skills that you would need to register a level 6 optimized level, or a level 5 a management level, or a 4 information level. And in real terms, it means the following. One would like to see on level 4, where we measure our results, the capability to analyze and collect data, so that when you ask the accounting officer, when they come to your next hearing, could you tell us the percentage of transactions that's below 30,000 Rand? Why 30,000 Rand? Between below 30,000, you don't need a tax certificate, a B certificate, etc. And if we have time, I'd like to show you a slide that suggests that 84% of all transactions in government is below 30,000 Rand. It's significant because it means that SMMEs, that's where they're going to compete. And maybe the set of rules that we put out should be easier for SMEs on the 30,000 Rand quotation basis. But what we wouldn't like to see is that we split the tender and we buy 8 or 9 or 10 times from a supplier for less than 30,000 in a year's time, and the total value eventually is around 500,000 Rand. That would be manipulating the system. The second kind of thing that you might want to ask an accounting officer, so just the percentage of the transactions that is more than a million Rand, because those are the risk, it's probably the transactions that we need to keep a close eye on from a risk perspective. And according to our data from the central procurement system, it's about 2% of transactions that fall in this bracket, but it represents 60% of the money. So an accounting officer would be wise to manage 2% of the transactions and cover 60% of the money. A little bit of effort, a lot of impact. Do they know that what those tenders are? Accounting officer is a busy person, and maybe 2 or 3 hours a week just on that area of work will help him achieve the objectives of the department while reducing value for money. When I say the culture of war is not there, if you ask the procurement officials to give us data, they can't. The skill to analyze the data is at the moment not sufficiently developed. And it's important to have that skill before we can go to level 5 of the maturity model. We have undertaken a skills survey of all national, provincial, local supply chain officials, approximately 15,000 officials. Concluded at the end of July. I have preliminary results to maybe indicate the qualification level, the numbers, the distribution of the provinces, and hopefully when that report is available, we could submit for your further scrutiny. The initial assessment is that we have a serious problem in that regard. So I just wanted to give members assurance that that statement is not a generalization based on sensation. It's based on an actual survey and skills assessment that we indicate that we have a problem. I would hate to not report in a balanced fashion. Oversight, accountability, and enforcement is a problem for us. We believe that the first frontier is the supervisor that needs to take action. And then the head of the unit, and maybe then the accounting officer, and then the treasuries, the national treasury, before it comes to you honorable members as the ultimate oversight and accountability body of government. We unfortunately do not see that happen. Why do I say so? The Public Service Commission just released a report that there's 200,000 public servants who have registered companies and has in fact received government business. 200,000 officials receiving tenders or orders is 200,000 too many. And we don't see real action taken on that. Unfortunately, I don't have a number in a previous period to see if it's improving or not. This is a red flag that I think we need to manage. When Mr. Brown had the opportunity, chairperson, to approach cabinet, the main premise of his argument was that procurement, the two elements in the budget that probably have the most impact on service delivery is one, the wage bill, where emphasis on productivity, on innovation, on doing more with less with the human capital that we have is probably a consideration. He argued that procurement is the second biggest opportunity where we can register efficiency and effectiveness gains. And this is the instrument that we must use when our leaders go to communities and say there will be water, there will be roads, there will be schools. It eradicates all credibility when the leaders say, I'll come back to you of this community Monday and we'll start to build. And it only happens a year later when the demand plan and a tender has been published. No leader would have the confidence to return to that community because of the administrative dysfunctionality. It also, unfortunately, eradicates all confidence in public service and the ability to deliver. And we believe that the procurement process is too slow, non-responsive, and lacking innovation to deal with the real challenges that we have. And there's many instances, many mayors inform us, or municipal official managers, they say the mayor was in a community on the weekend. There's a real issue. We need to have a meeting in the town hall. Now we need to print posters. It's an emergency. We need to do it now. And it's a real thing. If we don't deal with the concerns immediately, next week we'll have another Bagger's Dull or another protest. But if it happens 3 times, 4 times, then a better procurement instrument would be to appoint a panel of service providers for 2 years where you can pick up the phone in the morning and say, give me a quote. By 10 o'clock you've got 3 quotes. You place the order by 1 o'clock, they're delivered tomorrow morning. So the argument from officials that the regulations is also not empowering enough, it's not truthful in the sense that we've just not explored the options that speak to our direct needs. Secondly, sir, the alignment between the procurement strategy and the departmental strategy is totally disjuncted, disconnected, apologies. 9 out of 10 times, the demand plan is not executed as it is suggested. We, for years, have seen that January, February, March, the spending goes through the roof. Money is suddenly available, and it's not aligned with what we said we want to do. It's now buying computers and other capital assets, or transferring money to the implementing agents. Currently, our biggest supplier in government is Kuga. A huge amount of money is transferred to Kuga as an implementing agency because of the perception that it is a fiscal dumping instrument. And we'll see to that a little bit later on where does the money go. Then the procurement alignment between the capability and the departmental strategy. Nobody in this country in the current public service has built a nuclear
power station, if we're going to build one, I'm not sure if there is, is an agreement on that yet. Expecting the official and the partner that buy a stationary and a travel agent now to put out a bid for a nuclear plant is nonsensical. It will be a disaster. We need to get specialists to deal with specialist commodities. And the notion that generalist kind of procurement specialists is going to save the day and help us to improve on our service delivery mandates is nonsensical.
Can I just intervene with regards to the funding of nuclear? It's a completely different funding model for nuclear than other procurement.
Let's just note the issues we want to raise later.
Maybe that was a bad example. We can use the Gautrain or the dam that he built. The point I'm trying to make is that specialist procurement cannot be generic skills. I've already spoken to the capability maturity model, and if we want to be a world-class professional public service like we have agreed in the National Development Plan, the skills that we have now is at a 2.8 level and a 6-point scale, and this is a powerful lever. Maybe when accounting officers appear before you, one could interrogate what was done to build the skill of the procurement group. Members, the skills that we think is important for a well-functioning, efficient procurement unit would be, first of all, to formulate accurate demand plan. Secondly, to link good procurement modalities to execute that demand. Thirdly, we need to get the items and specifications correct. Many of the tenders are cancelled because the specification is so unclear that a supplier cannot submit a useful bid, and it impacts on the delivery as well. Supply management is essential, and we think it's a focus area for the future. Bid management is essential. IT contract is a classical example where we pay for guarantees for computers, never call down the guarantee, but instead pay the service charges. Legal contracting disputes, we pay billions a year in cancelling contracts. Legal cost in dealing with suppliers, the contract management and just the contractual obligations is messy to say the least. We can't find the documents, we can't litigate when we go to court. Currently we lose 9 out of 10 court cases with suppliers, often with senior counsel. Inspection and quality management has been reduced to a certificate. While we know that the quality of buildings are not always up to standard. And then product and service management linked to the audit and enforcement processes are a little bit too late. 18 months after the project, the audit report only surfaces, and that unfortunately doesn't help us to recoup any monies that we need to deal with. Chairperson, I mentioned that we believe that there's a couple of thoughts on what we can do immediately. So Treasury has undertaken a portfolio analysis of government spend, and I have a couple of slides maybe just to demonstrate the thinking. When we say a portfolio analysis, it means that we have categorized all services, all supplies, and all works or infrastructure in a common international commodity classification system. That helped us to identify what is government really buying. And it might sound far-fetched pretend that this has never been done, but up to now we use COAL, the standard chart of accounts, which is an accounting framework. SCOA has got 8 segments. It deals with the type of funding, the regional identifier, which district, which ward, the vote, the objective and responsibility code, which is maybe just the public service language for cost centers, and it's a classification matrix. But we've never had a commodity classification, and we've just more or less finished or finalized or will finalize on the 15th of August the portfolio analysis. So from this slide, you can see that government spends most of its goods and services budget on commercial and office building construction services. The reason why we did this analysis, we are a small office, we are about 50 people. A percentage of these deal with the central tenders or the transversal tenders, so we're actually only about 20 that deal with policy, IT, etc. And this helps us to focus from a risk perspective on the commodity classes that we really need to keep our eye on. The 27 commodities that we listed here represents 80% of the national spend. 23.7 billion in this period went to commercial and office buildings. It becomes significant if you add the second one, leases, rental property. And this will give you indication that from procurement perspective, the likes of the DPW that deals with construction, leases, designs, and maintenance is the area that we need to focus on more specifically. We therefore have engaged the department, and we are developing a commodity model for three types: leases, construction, and a built, operate, and transfer model. Well, it's more kind of a turnkey decision, so that it is less cumbersome to go to the market and test the market. Complexities with this kind of procurement is if the Home Affairs office where the ID has been on the corner of Street A and Street B for the last 20 years, you don't really want to change that look. The community knows where that office is. The same with the clinic. We don't change a clinic address because after 5 years we need to go out to the market again. It is not working for the community. So we must find a different way that's practical for the business model to procure this. And things that we consider, for instance, we do a market analysis and we determine in this area we pay 65 rand a square meter. If it falls within that parameters and it is transparent and it's clear, and it's still competitive, then we're not going to move that clinic. It just doesn't make business sense. What we cannot do is because that Home Affairs office or that clinic has been there, pay 10 times what the market rate would be. That is just also not transparent enough. And the commodity approach that we agree with the department is something that's practical, economical, and transparent at the moment. The commodity types, I'm not sure if we should spend a lot of time on this. This is just an example. If healthcare services is a commodity that we spend a lot of money on, in this instance it's about 12 billion per year, in this year, medical practitioners would then represent areas such as the private sector healthcare. Many times doctors are contracted in. And then a procurement type would be we agree with a medical practitioner on certain rates. No doctor is going to tender to provide services. We must find something that's smarter to deal with that problem. Nutrition services, healthcare centers, medical laboratory costs are some of the examples where the traditional three quotes, a tender and a transversal contract, would not be applicable, and we'll find better ways to procure. I'm not sure if this is just another example of the same thing. This list on the slide number 13, honorable members, is just an indication of, at the consolidated level, who's our top suppliers. most of our money, our number one supplier is the IDP, because of their involvement in building and construction services, and it's a healthy chunk of the national budget. And then the NHLS is the second biggest supplier of governments. It's important work that they do, and cost of that obviously will save us a lot in the prevention of diseases, and making sure that we prescribe the right medicine to patients. So it's a good input cost, although we're worried that it's a big chunk of expenditure. I've listed the rest for noting. It's important for us as National Treasury, as we will engage these suppliers, make sure that we get consistency. The thing that we don't like to see is that the same commodity are charged at different rates in different provinces. For instance, a photocopier, we don't, from the data that we see, is sometimes it's charged for two or three times the price that a national department would be paying, which we don't believe is sensible. It should probably be a premium for travel and maintenance, because it's far from the center, but three, four times the price is a red flag for us. This slide on slide number 14, just the indicator of the departments from a goods and services perspective, that's the biggest stimulus, and that's correctional services, justice, water affairs, public works, basic education. That's total spend through goods and services. So currently the OCDO is trying to address some of these through a strategic sourcing approach. And if members would entertain the idea of maybe just going to page 37 of the review, the diagram on page 37 is an illustration to the conventional approach to procurement. The graph illustrates in the red that traditionally we spend virtually all our time on the publication of the bid, the evaluation and adjudication of the bid, and very little in the preparation and the contract management processes. If we go to the next page, page 38, it's our proposition that under strategic sourcing approach, we believe that the energy should actually go into the preparatory phases, where research, identifying the best approach to the procurement, should outweigh the actual administrative process of publicizing the bid, evaluating, adjudicating, and then a significant percentage of energy should go into the actual contract management of the supplier. Having this in mind, we believe that for travel and accommodation, we should find a different way to approach travel and accommodation for government. It represents currently 3.5 billion rand for national provincial departments. We are developing a technology that will work like an internet search engine, where we identify the deal of the day, where we have the ability to identify per town, per district, per province, service providers that are accredited and listed on the travel directory, that will interface directly with the ordering system of government, so that it's easy for us to do a three-way mapping between order, delivery note, and payment, also to deal with 30-day payment delays. This is a powerful tool for B&Bs, and we don't expect the workforce to go and stay in substandard accommodation. That's not at all the idea. But in economy where B&Bs with tourism and travel is fairly commonly available, this really provides quite a bit of opportunity for small businesses to flourish. Telecommunications is an interesting area in the sense that data, mobile technology and fixed lines represent more or less 2.5 billion rand expenditure per year. We think that departments like police would benefit from closed networks. It's a mobile technology where you can buy a phone within a closed network, so there's a unit with 10 or 15 people, for a fixed price, unlimited calls. Secondly, we're going to issue a standard on cell phones. There's currently packages that you have unlimited calls for 1,000 rand a month, but we see some of the expenditures go up to 8,000-9,000. Somebody just doesn't apply the mind what's available on the market. We also think if, as the biggest buyer in the country, we probably can negotiate a better price. It's sad that with 3 or 2.5 billion rand of procurement power, we pay the same rates or more that I pay on my personal capacity with my salary every month. It just doesn't make sense. So we have engaged the 4 major cell phone providers. We're considering approaches to data or mobile data where there's a more beneficial service delivery. And Chairperson, I'd like to make it clear that our strategy is not to bargain. Bargain means that at all costs we win. And the supplier would probably walk away with a feeling of I've been ripped off or I've been put in a corner if I don't accept them as FUSAC. That's not the idea. Negotiate is when we find a balance between a beneficial position for government as well as a beneficial position for the supplier. And that's basically what this would do. We're doing the same for computer services, CETA. We pay too much for computers, we pay too much for data, we pay too much for infrastructure. I'm confident that by the end of this year, we will have a better value proposition. You might have noted that we've recently published a transversal contract for consultancy services. The Auditor General points out that we pay a lot of money for consultants, and then when we get financial statements, there's all errors on it. It's the same with the building industry. It's the same with management accountants and then other services. So as a first attempt, we have published a month ago a tender for a sensory-led procurement for professional services in the audit, internal audit, risk management, preparation of financial statements. The award, first round of awards has been finalized. The adjudication committee will probably finalize this before the end of August, and hopefully we will have the benefit of bulk buying, quality control, and a regional presence of the consultancy services. 45 service providers has submitted bids, and we think we will have an impact on that. In the Minister's budget speech, he also announced that education will be supported through the learner and teacher support material. 2 tenders were published, 1 for stationery and 1 for the dissemination of textbooks. Those 2 tenders have closed, been adjudicated, and I believe that the successful suppliers will be informed and sign contracts before the end of this month. Chairperson, the Minister has also in his budget speech mentioned that for too long we have paid too much for the building of schools. We are currently paying 100 million rand for an average school of 900 learners. And we should be paying between 52 and 40 million rand depending on soil conditions. So we've issued instruction note number 2 of 2015 this year, which was a result of a cost model to try to contain the cost for building new schools as well as the extension of existing schools. The approach is really, when we've paid, it's too late. Like crying about spilled milk. We need to erase the cost creep at the budgeting phase. And this model makes it incumbent on the departments that issue these orders to do a thorough calculation, agree with the service provider, and if it falls within that parameter, then it's easy to proceed. If it falls outside of it, then there's reasons, maybe it's Ocran, you need to shoot with, or use dynamite, or whatever the case may be, it is a possibility. The procedure is very clear how we will overcome that, and very quickly. So we've seen some positive impact on that already. The same with health. The medical equipment, drugs and medicine, tenders, is probably the biggest chunk of transversal contracts. There's currently 20 pharmaceutical contracts, which represent about 100 billion over their lifespan. Many of them are multiple year contracts. But we've seen the reduction in the cost of medicine, a significant reduction, up to 30% in some instances. We think that continuing on this would get more efficiencies into the system. And we are on the verge of advertising a bid now for 40 commodities. It's hearing aids, wheelchairs, things like that. Mr. Brown also asked me to specifically bring to your attention that he's worried about the following. He believes that construction and infrastructure, we do not have a handle on the cost drivers. And the cost drivers is really those professional services. He's worried that we build a reservoir in every district, we redesign it from scratch, and every time we pay for that design. There is no reason why we should redesign a 200,000-liter reservoir for every district and ward. He wants efficiency in that area, and we're working with the CIPD on how we can do that best. He's also worried about procurements in the area of human settlements, super profits. I've mentioned yesterday, honorable members, that there's a building just outside my office where private sector pays 5,700 rand a square meter, and the same supplier is building for government at 16,500. It is criminal. It's also our own fault as government. We don't take decisions quickly. We don't have good specifications. We don't project manage well. We must up our game as well. He's particularly worried about the cost of RDP houses and the cost, the quality, and he finds it annoying that we are spending 2 billion rand again to fix houses that's not 2 or 3 years old yet. Mr. Brown's of the opinion that the waste with entities has reached a level that requires prominent intervention. Much of the spend happens at the entity level, at the ESCOMs and the PRASAs and the SAAs of this world. Just because of the sheer nature of the procurement, it represents several billion rand at a time. And he believes that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer needs to play a much more prominent role, and we shouldn't wait for the Auditor General to tell us what went wrong. But he believes that pre-issuance reviews of tenders of specs before they are released would be a significant improvement to get a bit more efficiency, obviously not to delay the process. And then infrastructure at all three spheres of governments, for hospitals, for roads, for dams, for water delivery. He believes that in municipalities, water purification plants, electrical infrastructure, distribution networks, solar energy, and those processes are things that we need to keep an eye on. Chairperson, what has the Treasury done so far? The first intervention that we have taken to address areas of non-compliance, but also to make it easier to do business with government, is to establish a central supplier database. Up to now, a supplier had to present the original copy of a tax certificate, a BE certificate, a CIPC, it's the Commission for Intellectual Property and Company Registration, or the old CIPRA, plus original copies of the bid documents, a certified copy of bank account by a bank, and declarations that that you do not have any conflict of interest. It's a good heavy pack of documents that you have to submit. And like it goes, the auditor always asks that file where the documents are not complete. So the central supplier database is a logical database, it's not physical, which electronically interface with SARS, with Home Affairs on the National Population Register, SIPC, not yet with the BEE grouping, but it's intended to do so before the 1st of April. And it gives a opportunity to register online once for the whole of government with all those compliance requirements. So it's a basically generic database hosted at the Treasury that interfaces with SARS, and if we get a message back that the supplier is in good standing, that company is registered. The same for bank accounts, the same for ID numbers, the same for if this is an employee of the state, and it is valid for 1 year, and then automatic notifications are sent to the supplier. For the supplier, it means a significant reduction in the administrative burden. Currently, the supplier would register with in original documents to each department, each provincial department, each entity, plus each local authority that they do business with. So for instance, KPMG currently does business with 20 national departments, 57 provincial departments, about 50 municipalities, and I don't know how many entities. In every instance, they have to register these originals. With this supplier database, they will register once. Secondly, the Auditor General will audit it only once at one central place. Previously, they audited the same information at every location. And thirdly, we will inform the supplier 3 months in advance. Your tax certificate will expire on this date. Please, sir, please let madame, you need to take the necessary steps to make sure that your certification is in order. We have put the infrastructure in place on the 1st of April this year. We have did the user acceptance testing, and we are ready to go live on the 1st of September of this year. The Minister of Finance plans to launch this central supplier database in East London on the 1st of September. What will happen to those suppliers who do not have access to technology? Firstly, the post office has got the biggest footprint in South Africa and has infrastructure that will enable them to assist suppliers that do not have access to a smartphone, an internet and a computer to register on this. But if you don't have a post office in your area, you can go to the Toussaint Centre. There's about 56 of these centres that are available for a multitude of services, and you can have the same support. Or if you don't have a post office or a Toussaint Centre, you can also go to CEDA. Many small suppliers go to CEDA for funding, and then it makes sense to, at the same venue, assist that supplier to register. But if you don't have a Toussaint Centre, a post office, a CEDA, or a computer, you can still go to departments, regional offices. Many departments have regional offices where we will assist you to register on the central supplier database. This is enormous undertaking, and it really signals the first prominent approach to digitalized procurement. We do not see modern procurement in a paper-based system. For us to be competitive as South Africans and as a government probably, we need to embrace the digitalization and the electronic commerce as viable options to get going. Peterson, I'm also aware that you have a vested interest in progress on the integrated financial management system. We just thought, you know, we've heard for 10 years that there will be an IFMS. This is something that we did for very little money on the existing infrastructure. It's really a huge change management exercise and a very small technology advancement. We've designed it in such a way that when the IFMS comes into reality, we will unplug this from the current Logos system. We use Logos for departments, and we will plug it into IFMS. With the benefit that you've already have change management, you've got team data, and that it will enable a lot of other activities. Members, we're almost done, and we can take your wisdom into account. The Amazon.com is a private sector concept that allows 24/7, 365 access to commerciality. In government, we think that it's very difficult at the moment to buy from transversal contracts. A practitioner will go to our website, then they would download the contact number, they would search the item code, and then our clothing tender is about 7,000 items. Some of them are very confusing. It's a t-shirt XXXL non-nylon content, and you have to search to find that. And then one writes it down, and depending on your procurement system, you would put it in, and it would 9 out of 10 times say, oh, there's not 2 supporting quotations. But on a transversal contract, it's already a bit that went through the procurement process. It's just for central lead. So we developed the e-commerce site. We call it e-commerce.gov.za, where the transversal contracts of government are listed. This is an example of the medical equipment vendor, where there's a little visual photo of what you buy with a specification on the diametrics, the price. Buyer would have a delegation to buy this. You don't want everybody just to have access. It is a delegation framework. It automatically interfaces with Logos, generates an order, and then the supplier will be managed. It allows us probably to, for the first time, to easily see which departments buy and in which areas. But more importantly, we can now see where off-contract procurement happen. Let me give you an example. We've got fuel contracts where fuel is procured on behalf of government. It's allocated per zones. And many suppliers complain to us and say, I'm a small business, I set this up, but I never get a tender. Why so? And when we then go to the procurement things, we see, no, there's a lot of payments for fuel, but it's bought from other suppliers. Now, what is not good to note is that often that off-contract spend is at a higher price for lower quality commodities. In a fuel instance, we bought the fuel for 10 rand a liter, and on the off-tender commodities, we had instances where we paid 19 rand a liter. Now, if you buy 1 or 2 million liters a month at 19 rand a liter, something is wrong. With that kind of volumes, you should pay less, not more. So this site and the reporting functionality will help us to deal with that kind of thing. And then enforcement must exit well. We are ready to launch the first 3 tenders, medical equipment, fuel, and textiles, on the 1st of September. Currently, transversal contracts work in terms of departments that at the onset indicated that they want to participate. On the 1st of April next year, it will be compulsory to use this centrally negotiated tenders. Chairperson, the third technology that's currently available is the e-tendering system, and I'd like to maybe check with the members if anybody has heard about the e-tender portal. If you have a smartphone, I invite you to quickly go to www.eplenders.gov.za. Oh, there's no reception here. Sorry, sir. Sorry, sir, I withdraw the statement, if that's appropriate. www.eplenders.gov.za. The ePlender portal is a single point of entry where all bids above 500,000 Rand are published. It's searchable per province, per department, per commodity type, per district. If you are interested to see what health commodity tenders is available in the Capricorn district, you'll click District Capricorn, commodity type, health related, and maybe you would want to say above 5,000 units. Maybe you don't want to deliver anything less than 5,000. And we'll search and provide you with all open tenders for that commodity. The website went live on the 1st of April this year. Currently, we have published just over 1,000 tenders in the first quarter. It's significant that it presents about 2 billion rand of procurement opportunities per week at national, provincial, and we will go live with municipal and entity tenders compulsory from the 1st of April next year. It's a free website. Many of these are available, but a small supplier needs to pay for it. It reduces a lot of duplication. Previously, you had to search the 9 provincial tender bulletins, national tender bulletin, read the Sunday papers for tender advertisements, visit multiple websites. And if you're a small company and you're a one-man show, you don't have the time to search for those. The e-tendering website is a valuable aid. The second thing it does, it produces the all demand bands for national departments and most provinces. There's still provinces that do not have a plan available, but we're working with them so that a committee like this can maybe go to this website when you have a hearing for a certain department, search which tenders are available, and it's then possible to engage real time with the accounting officer on his demand plan. The third thing it does, it publishes awards. So if you want to know who got the tender in the Capricorn district for the medical supplies, the name, the price, plus who were the competitors are listed under awards. And it's transparent, it's open, and it's accessible to you 24/7. If you have a really bad incident of insomnia, this is certainly an instrument that could maybe help you with your oversight functionality. I think we've spoken about the conducive SCM environment. So we think for this committee to note and maybe to take your wisdom, our next steps, we believe that it's important that performance criteria and a performance framework be agreed with accounting officers. In principle, Cabinet agreed. We are in the process of finalizing what is the critical items that we need to measure. At the moment, what comes to mind is we want to know how long it takes for tender to be prepared, published, and awarded. We want to every month report and say, sir, in your department it takes 187 days on average. The national average is 57 days. We think maybe there's a problem in your department. The second thing that we like to report on is the amount of spent per practitioner, so that we have an even distribution of resources, that there's enough procurement people that that deals with it. The third thing that we think that might be very relevant for you is the number of awards made through competitive bidding, the number of awards made through deviations, the number of awards made through extensions of contracts. We see too often that a contract is extended for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, up to 10 years. We even had the other day one for 15 years. Extensions are not allowed in terms of the regulations. if it exceeds 15% for goods and services and 20% for infrastructure, or 50 million rand in value. These areas where there's a reason for extension within good measure. If it becomes the default position, then we think you probably didn't plan well as a department. The fifth item that we think we should report on performance is the contract management. So when we say performance, we would like to have your insights in those areas. How long it takes, the number of people, the number of public competitions, deviations, extensions, and thirdly, hopefully the contract management aspect. How many contracts have you in place, what's the value thereof, and the time that they will run. We also think that capacity is important. It's okay, Chairperson, we could submit the baseline study on the capability of SEM for your perusal. It's important that you have a skilled professional workforce. Then we also think it's important that accounting officers brief the ministers, the executive authorities on a quarterly basis. Minister, we plan to build so many houses, we've launched 75 tenders, 50 of them are awarded in this contract, in these areas, these are the contracts, this is the amounts, and this is what we've done. We're on track, we are falling behind, but the executive authority has some information that he or she can keep in mind to keep officials on their toes. The National Treasury has very specific things that we must do. We must simplify and modernize the legal framework. Too many instructions all over the show. It needs to be in one place. Secondly, we must simplify, standardize, and automate procurement. If I may give you an example of what this means, we currently have a rotation process for quotations. It's merely because if it was paper, it's impractical if there's 5,000 companies in Cape Town that can do catering to invite 5,000 administratively will never come to conclusion. It's just impractical. But if we do this electronically, there's no reason why we can't invite all 5,000 interest. In fact, they already do it in some places in South Africa in government. So we must simplify the rules. Rotation was put in a regulation for a practical consideration. Technology makes that rule nonsensical. We must modernize technology. I showed you a couple of examples of what we've done. We've got the e-tendering website. We have the central supplier database. We have the e-commerce center. And it's our intention to roll out the full-fledged e-procurement suite that would automate demand planning, the codification and commodity master, differentiated procurement types, and meaningful and useful reports that can come to a committee like this, so that we just get better bang for our money. We do believe, sir, that through smart and intelligent procurement, we can probably save government between 5 and 15 billion a year. Our office are focusing its energies on governance, strategic sourcing, transversal contracts, ICT, capacity building and policy. Policy for small business, black industrialization, women companies, smallholder farmers, township economies, and a host of other areas is receiving attention. We have good collaboration with DTI, Department of Small Business and Agriculture, and a host of others, and we believe that the momentum is changing to debate and discussion where we talk about value propositions, strategic vantage points, long-term value chains, even considering concept like secondary supply chains, where suppliers and suppliers and supply government comes into the value proposition, is something that we think will become a reality over time. For now, we're trying to stabilize the procurement system, provide technology to help us advance both capabilities and make sure that we as procurement specialists do our little part to have a sound financial management system, sir. With those few slides and the review, I wonder, Chairperson, if this is not a good time to maybe take the consideration of yourself and the committee members.
Great, thank you very much. Somebody has hand watch, who can manage time. Well, obviously this is the longest presentation we have ever had in the committee, but which in itself signifies how important this presentation was, because supply chain management is about how the money that is appropriated is actually being used. So it is at the heart and the center of what we're all about, reviewing how the budget is spent to deliver service to our people. I think that the picture that has been created is a challenging one. That's why we finished with all of our hands up, because we want to have this thing. Right, Comrade Shilwane, Comrade Kuno, and then we'll move this way. So, come to Rob, and then to.
Thank you, Chairperson. If it's just a small question before I'll come back. I just want to let me start by thanking the presenter for the presentation. I want to get a clarity in terms of the budget of contracts that the office is mainly doing its job, and the finish of the department in terms of them allocating this contract. What is it, the particular set of budget that was set out by the Minister of Finance, or it's a budget that comes from different departments in terms of their own planning? Secondly, is this office already up and running in terms of, is it housed in the national government, and how do you link with your provincial departments or provincial governments and municipal governments? Thank you, Chairman. I'll come back. I just want to get the clear on that one.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think more than anything, it shows how you take your job seriously. There was a lot of passion when you were presenting, but you left us with a lot of passion in our minds. I think the question that my colleague has asked here, I mean, how long have you been there in office? I agree, before you start anything, you need to have a case study, which is what I think this office has done. But I want to agree again with my colleague yesterday, who was saying, but after 20 years, we are trying to put these things. Are we just waking up now? Why was this not done before? Chairperson, everybody's job is very important, from a cleaner to the president. And I believe that if you want to turn South Africa around, if you want to see changes in South Africa, there needs to be communication from that cleaner who's cleaning the streets up to where the president is. I agree with you that political interference is always a problem. But there's no way you can say to ministers, we'll come and report to you on a quarterly basis on what we have done, this is what they need, and this is the tenders that were advertised, these are the bidders, blah, 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 blah. Because at the end of the day, the executive should be in charge of evaluation and monitoring. How do they do that if they can only liaise at the end of, you know, we are giving you knowledge? But Chairperson, my problem again is that we have said South Africa. They always bring states and you know, how many are we, what needs to be here and there. There are so many plans that have been in place since 1994. But, you know, it's like wasting money on this and that, but at the end of the day, there's no way we go and coordinate and say, we have this information, we have town planners, we have a division from trade and industry that deals with planning and all that, and everybody knows that in this particular town, this is how much, what is it that we need, blah, 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 blah. But we are forever making mistakes. For instance, we'll talk about sewer networks, that there should be sanitation in all municipalities and all that, but you still see some municipalities that are still funding dirty toilets and all that. Why? Because, you know, when I was checking your spending patterns, I thought that, you know, sanitation would be one of the key spenders and all that, because I think all the townships need that. But what I'm trying to realize that now with our homework yesterday and what you have presented here today is that we are never going to, I'm sorry to the person for being wrong, but we are never going to bridge the gap between the third and second economy in South Africa. SMMEs will end up being SMMEs, and there's no way where they are going to grow from SMMEs to get into the market that is really serious. We'll always find a contractor from Germany to come and build how train for us, and we'll never train people enough in South Africa to say, you know, this we have our own black money and robbers. It's wrong, blacks are a majority in this country, but their economies are still down there. When are we going to improve them? I agree with you, we need to have strong houses, strong infrastructure, things that are going to be there forever. But when are we bringing them on board to say, this is the transfer of skills that is needed? You know, being equals and all that doesn't really mean anything. We are politicians, been there, we have political offices and all that. Where you find a cleaner in somebody's office is there as part of the, for them to get BEE certificate. They don't even know what's happening as far as the company is concerned. But because somebody wanted a tender from government, they had to bring in servicing on board a cleaner or a tea lady in the office. So when I listen to you, the frustrations of transformation. I'm asking myself sitting here, will there be transformation? Do you see any light as far as transformation is concerned? Thanks, Chair, sorry for taking off.
Yeah, Ross. Ross, we're going by another straight line, and then it will be... Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just from the outset, let me say that I'm also extremely concerned with regards to the progress in terms of actual implementation from the budget office. We all understand it's a complex problem. It's a massive challenge to bring all the elements together, which I think we've highlighted very adequately. They're also perhaps lacking a bit far in terms of a political overview to us. And I must say I was impressed with the last part of the presentation when we actually, Chairperson, came to the central control. We spoke about the integrated financial management systems that you need, and then also the e-tendering process. And thank you for some progress in that regard. But for the rest, I believe that we are left with a lot of problems. And let me say, because you said, sir, that you are a procurement specialist, and I think I'd like to talk about the mandate. What's your mandate in terms of this? Not going too far off, that you should be a procurement specialist, and that you need to address the unauthorized expenditure of the year that we've been presented yesterday for the 2013 year, of 467 million in unauthorized expenditure that rose to 903 million. Those are the challenges. And then irregular expenditure, 2.3 billion that rose to an unacceptable 5.2 billion in national departments, and then in public enterprises, as you all said, was a major challenge in terms of procurement. That rose from 4.6 billion to 12.7 billion. 12.7 billion. So I think that's where the procurement measures on containing costs should be key. And I think that should be the focus areas. Now, what we heard yesterday is fluctuations are actually related to supply chain management processes. That was said. Competitive bidding processes are not followed. Awards of contracts to employees and close family members are not followed. You indicated that. Lack of controls to ensure declaration of interest is not followed. Ineffective management of contracts and procurements without quotations. Now, certainly that should be your focus area to start with. Now, the root cause of the poor SCM, so you said performance in government of, and you can just provide us what should be done. There should be a lack of, there should be clear standard directives for the whole of government. My question to you is, have you, can you honestly say to them that there is those standards actually set out in the national departments, in the provincial departments, and perhaps also in local departments? Now, just to quickly ask you your reforms that you've proposed, also a question is, the current reforms are underway, as you said, they will include tender documents, will be made user-friendly, they will be standardized, and operating procedures will be developed. Now, this is very vague. Unfortunately, that shows very little progress. When will it be developed? When will it be made user-friendly? When will it be standardized? Business process to be streamlined, unnecessary steps will be removed, will be a central database, the schools will be automated. And let me just say, no, this is the question. In terms of business process to be streamlined, what is the progress? Where are we actually standing if we have a future determination still to be need to be done? And then the question also with regards to the role of the Office of the Procurement Officer. The OCPO, Office of the Procurement Officer, will provide support and then comply with national treasury norms and standards. It's all in process. If you can elaborate, perhaps, in terms of the progress made in this role. Chairperson, and then a huge concern is, perhaps you can just highlight that for me again that I understand it. The procurement process, the strategic plan, the annual plan, the demand plan, which is very important, and thank you for noting that for us. 10% correlation between the demand plan and the actual implementation of this three. This is very low, and that seems that I'm not quite sure when was the office established, what was the progress in terms of your time frame, if you can give me the date, because we have huge hopes as South Africans that we will actually address the 30 billion corruption, which is procurement related per year, as indicated. And then also we have the irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, showing huge amounts. So we need to address those focus areas. Sarison, yes, in conclusion, I would just like to say that we are extremely concerned. And the report also said that this is perhaps the crux of the matter, that we as politicians should look at the supply chain management bill. What do you expect of us? How far is the process and what documentation can we have to see what the progress in terms of this procurement bill is? Because I think that should be a substantial founding basic principle from where we should start operating. Perhaps your full details with regards to the progress of the bill. And then, of course, we agree with the rest that the national budget said the public sector spends 500 billion in 2013-14. That's when we could save those amounts. We should stop the corruption. And then ultimately, at least taxpayers and people paying services could pay less. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, I'll confine myself to questions and not comments. Thank you for coming today. You all know as well as I do that all of this is blue sky without implementation, without consequence. Right, so just starting a specific question. Your central database, fantastic idea, but I see that it lists all the perfunctory information that you need, SARS, etc., etc. Where do you, in that process, vet capacity? In other words, a nurse puts her info on the database. How do we know that she can't build a building? Do you know what I'm saying? So that's a question. I think if you don't have that functionality, we need to look at that. Somewhere in that database, that person is classified with X skills. So if you don't have a crazy situation where people know nothing about fire engine tires with this blind, for instance. Then if we just say, the next question I have for you is, do you think we're outsourcing too much? Do you think we've lost our ability or capacity in-house? Have we lost it completely in South Africa? Just an opinion from yourself in terms of building capacity in-house in the government. Then the next question I have is that the issue of transparent and open bids, and when I say open bids, I mean open BEC meetings and open BAC meetings, where just as a member of the public can come in today and view our conversation today without interrupting, that same thing happens in BEC and BAC. They've implemented it, they started to do it in Johannesburg at about 50 million and above. Now we all know that most of the expenditure happens below 50 million. So it's actually a little bit of, frankly, window dressing. So I'd like your impression on that. Then the other issue is action and penalties. Are penalties applied to companies supplying to government if they don't supply on time, if they go over speed? We got a stat last week that 75% of bills in South Africa is normally double the budget and double the time. Now, I come from a construction background, my whole family. When you rent over time, there's 100,000 rand a day penalty. We're applying that. And then also, I'm asking this in light of your study. You've done a study to give us this report. Do the study pick up any issues of penalties? Where they went over, where there were penalties in your study? And also in your study, where there was incorrect procurement procedures followed, were there consequences of actions? If you don't have that in your study, maybe you can give it to us. The other issues that have come up are public works. It's a massive procurement center in South Africa because of the biggest landlords. Is your opinion that public works should shed a lot of the assets that it got and give them back to apartments so that it would make it easier for them to manage their assets? Right, then on the e-commerce site, once again a great site, that's obviously relating to people already on the database, the e-commerce database. Is there a measure in that database? So you're still with me, Scott? Is there a measure on that database that enables us to have the functionality to check that the wheelchair is not priced differently on that database as it is on the country? Do you know what I'm saying? So we make sure does e-commerce check the entire market or just what's on the database with the recommend prices? Then your opinion on the role of internal audit, because now we can do implementation. This is all blue sky, it's all fantastic, and I really appreciate what you're coming up with, but what Honourable Kunai says, we'll just continue without implementation. There's got to be consequences. So I keep banging this drum, internal audit must be strengthened. Do you agree with that? And then finally is my parting shot. Are you guys taken seriously? My researcher tells me we've been around 50 years. Is this review part of policy? Is it just your department's opinion? Are you being taken seriously? Or do you find that you're actually being ignored by government and that is why this rot continues? Because apparently nothing's really changed. You know, and despite the best intentions, and they are very well thought out intentions, are we turning the corner? And the issue is that we see this with departments internally. People come to us and say, we'd love to do our report, we're not taken seriously by our political leadership and by the accounting officer. We're not resourced properly, we're not financed properly, we don't have the right skills, etc. So, will internal audit make a massive difference, and are you properly resourced, are you taken seriously in terms of what you're sitting out in the review? Thank you, Chair. Sorry.
Yes, Chair. Let me start off by saying, we appreciate that is the presentation, but I think this is long overdue. I would focus on the e-commerce and the itinerary because the things that I should not understand. My colleague Kiyahon spoke about issues like the BACs and the BECs. I just want you to explain that is the process because in one of your documents, particularly on this one, on the introduction, there is an acknowledgement that SCM across South Africa is fragmented. Now, I just want to know that in the preliminary work, particularly the specifications, who is going to be responsible? Is it going to be departments or you are going to take over that function? And if the matter is correct, who is going to obviously do checks and balances that is in your department? The other issue is that I want to correct or dispel is there is a few that is in the country I know particularly when I was still in the municipality, when they were introducing the Municipal Finance Management Act. And the reason for the introduction of the Municipal Finance Management Act was that politicians are corrupt, and this will be better placed or correctly placed, that is, in the officials. Is there a guarantee that if we centralize all that is procurement in the office, will there be efficiency? Because it's one issue that you indicated that it is a serious problem. And also it would eliminate, that is a problem that we have in the country, this issue of corruption. Thank you.
All right. I think what we will do is have to be as quick as possible. Most of the questions are interrelated. Safe to say that I think the issue of the supply chain management here is very important to talk to that, because then it starts to put the instrument that we need to manage the process. And comrades, I'm thinking that, and of course that's something we'll need to decide on, that beyond today, because today and the first meeting we're dealing more with the conceptual issues. How do we, going forward practically, reach an agreement, resolve that on an annual basis, the office must do an audit and present a report, so we're able to see at a practical level, no longer dealing with concepts, but the level of practice. And secondly, I think a lot of the issues that comrades raised here, and from what you have said, I think there are issues of inefficiency and transformation. That is transforming the entire SEM landscape. But there are certain levels of efficiency that can be attained even within the current arrangement, which is not attained. So it can be, I don't want us to the emphasis that the transformation, if we transform, then things are going to be right. When you don't have the capacity, if you don't have the skills, if you don't have the proper leadership, you can have legal framework and everything in place, but that in itself will not deliver the required services. And of course, the twin challenge of inefficiency and corruption, which currently denies us the ability to maximize the utilization of the resources within the current framework, which does need to be. And yesterday we spoke a lot about the 3-day payment. I think it forms part and parcel of the challenges within the supply chain management environment. Maybe let me keep this for last. And allow you to respond to the issues that you addressed.
Thank you, sir, and also to the members of these very pertinent questions. Minister of Finance announced the establishment of the Chief Procurement Office 3 years ago, and it came into effect about 2 years ago. The first incumbent is Mr. Kenneth Brown, and he started on the 1st of April 2013, that was when he assumed office. So we are probably 2 years down the line. We have 50 people on the establishment, and we're in the process of appointing another 20. The unit that I head up, ICT, was the last to be added, and it started the 1st of August last year. So it's really a fairly new unit. the links of the provinces and municipalities, madam, is that the OCPO sets policies, issues the norms and standards as per Section 6 of the PFMA and NFMA's requirements on norms and standards, but fulfills the governance and monitoring and compliance role, and then also to modernize. We work with the provinces. We see this as not a National Treasury intervention. It's a Team South Africa intervention. And Team South Africa for us is the National Treasury, provincial treasuries, municipalities, departments,
And even private sector and academia, we believe that we need to innovate, and we can innovate from experts and centers of excellence, and we think we can learn from the sector. But formally, it's the national treasury and the provincial treasury. Those 10 is the custodians of supply chain, and we believe that we direct in that regard. This juncture between planning and execution of budgets is not a new phenomenon. Where does the money go, or how we follow through the budget process, is something that we have been concerned through for a couple of years. And with the issue of transformation, I wanted to put in the Minister's budget speech a little bit of factual content of how many companies that we do business with actually got a BEE certificate, not even if it's a legitimate score, just a valid certificate. And that information was inaccessible. I couldn't identify a number. What gives me hope? The central supplier database will mean that I would be able to see that Skolk has 5 companies. Because I've got your ID number, I can see where you are directors. And if there's 5 bids in company A, B, C, D, the official wouldn't know if the owner is the same person, if he's black, white, or Indian. He will know there's 5 companies, but the ID number, the company registration number, if I'm an employee of government, my tax affairs and the BEE status matched together with bank accounts will give us intelligence that we've never had before. So the rule, how do we evaluate the tender, becomes much more meaningful and intelligent than just ticking a box, certificate attached, certificate attached, certificate attached. Currently, the DTI tells us that 20% of BEE certificates are fraudulent. So we've based our compliance work on premise that we have a piece of paper and we take it as face value. I don't blame practitioners. These color copies and printers is virtually impossible. We just had internal audit at our office, and one of the findings is we don't know if this is an original or a color copy. The quality is just that good. Tax SARS tells us 15% of certificates are fraudulent. So the single supplier database is the first major step that we can say transformation for black-owned women is at this level. Mapping it to an exact ID number, a percentage of the CIP certificate of business ownership. So the example that you use is a person working and she or he has 10% of ownership, but they score BEE scores. We will now have that information available. In fact, a person is in light of that data that comes to the fore that we have considered to maybe review also how the 80-20-90-10 pricing in terms of the triple PFA could be done. So, yes, madam. I have to agree that unfortunately all is not well. I go to the DTI on many days of the week for meetings, and recently I was offered a level 2 BE certificate of one of these vendors. Now I took it as a compliment, but you can see I shouldn't be qualifying. All is not well in that area. And transformation does not mean for us the number of certificates. It is that we make progress in our economic journey. And is there a small company that 5 years ago competed in a 200,000 bracket, but have now grown and become competitive and they bid for 2 million? That's progress. That's inclusivity. That's movement. But the database reveals that small business don't survive. The rotation system, the administrative burden. Private companies tell us it costs 150,000 rand to prepare a bid for 500 to 1 million rand. It costs a lot of money to do business in the state of all these burdens. The supplier database takes away the administrative burden for government and business. It eradicates duplication, so you register once and not at 50 departments, 70 municipalities and 20 entities. The information is much more valid than the old paper copies. And three, we can possibly do much more with targeted set-aside. If set-aside is going to be a policy, it will at least be possible to do this intelligently and do it per sector. And that gives me hope that this is still not blue sky. It's a reality. The system is up and running. It is going to be rolled out in the 1st of September. We've got 6 months of bringing the partners in, and from the 1st of April, this will be compulsory. On the question of the mandate, the unauthorized expenditure of the OCPO, sir, it's true that irregular expenditure emanates from many supply chain issues. And it's unforgivable that if you have the opportunity to go up on an open bid, that you have chosen a deviation or extension of the existing contract. The e-tendering website is a practical way that we register that. And when we say we publish awards, I mean four things. I mean a competitive bidding process where there was a couple of people competing who won. Extension of existing contract is also awarded. It's in terms of the Treasury Regulation 16A acceptable under civil conditions. It is a deviation from a process. It's an award. Emergency procurement where no quotes were invited is still an award, although it's just not supposed to be normal. And then quotations is the fifth award up. Again, the e-tendering process makes that transparency much more visible than we had in the past. You have that information available, and we should enforce that. How do we deal with irregular expenditure? What we do at the OCPO is many of this irregular expenditure comes through the same patterns. Every year we see the Department of Health and Education and Water and Sanitation appoint DBSA, KUGA, IDT. Then we get a non-compliance item because KUGA or DBSA has advertised the bid 18 days and the policy says it must be 21 days. So call these guys and say, but if you're an implementing agent, why do you default on the same basic things? That whole tender is regular. For the hospital revitalization program, for the school acceleration program, for the FET colleges, a couple of billion rand. Just because they advertised 18 days, not 21 days. So we call those departments in infrastructure and say, if you appoint the implementing agent accounting officer, it doesn't mean that it's no longer your problem. Here are the 7 key things that you need to manage. And I hear your frustration, members. We're talking about basic things still after 20 years if I understand the sentiments and the frustrations. So from our side, we see the patterns and we believe it's better to cure the disease before it actually happens. After the effect is about kites, about spilling milk, what are we going to do with this irregular expenditure and unauthorized? You will probably have to now forgive the sins. What we can do is we must prevent it before it happens, and that's what we do. We see where's the risks, we call in those areas. Can we do it in every instance? No, we're 50 people. But we do it on a risk basis and where it has the biggest effect. The example, the question about the objectives of the Treasury, to simplify tender documents, develop the operating procedures and the business steps, or eliminate unnecessary business steps. We have made progress. The e-commerce site, for instance, is a practical way we eliminate 5 or 6 steps by electronically interfacing. The central supply database has eliminated 30% effort already. The central supply, the e-commerce site is doing the same. So it is practical things that we're already doing. The 10 docs have been reduced, and they are in a draft format. The intention for us was in October to publish a draft set of operating procedures, policies, tender documents for consultation. And the sequence was simply this. The draft treasury regulations were published for public comment. We had 3,000 comments. We reduced that. It has gone to legal counsel. Yesterday, the treasury of the accountant general reported that it's now ready to publish that. It will come into effect of the 1st of April next year. And we thought it would be good to have a package of instructions, documents that speak to the regulations and have them ready released in September, that in 1 April we could release them. So we can share some of those concepts with you. They are available. They are the result of consultation with the provinces, and we believe that they will be released in one go. But they are there. On the bill, we are on version 11. We had also the opportunity to invite a number of legal people that showed a few issues that pertinently need attention. And it was our hope that before the end of this financial year to have consultations with a broader community. Our apprehension was we want to put a quality product on the table, and then with your inputs and guidance we can take it further. It's also available as a draft, and I hope that when you have appetite for it, we can engage a little bit more on that. Competencies of the central database. It's a pity that I don't have an internet connection here, but to demonstrate how the central database will work, if the supplier logs on, it's not a blank screen. If you have a registered company, all your information on Cipra is pre-populated. There's no sense that we put our ID number when you register, when the tax man wants your info, when your municipal guy wants your info, when you renew your license. The data is all over the show. So a supplier that registers will have a pre-populated form that comes from the National Population Register and Cipra. Then you only fall in the fields that that's not populated. Some of those are competency requirements. For instance, if you want to work in the security sector, you must register with the Private Security Regulatory Board, and a certificate is necessary for you to bid. It's things like a level 6 person that carries a firearm needs certain competencies. It's the same with the medical profession, that you must be registered with those. So we carry information on core areas, but it's not as comprehensive as yet. The second step that this thing does, it then automatically verifies the SARS with the DTI, with Home Affairs, and it corroborates the statements one has done, has made. It starts also off with a declaration. Legally, we are told that you have to tick, I agree to the terms and conditions. And if I have provided information that's not accurate, I will be prosecuted. This is standard terms and conditions. We do carry information on competencies in the database. The process of open bids, Gauteng has taken a shot. The city of Cape Town does the same. It's open to the public to participate, but there is a threshold. And one would like an opportunity where all bids are open. But it's also not practical. We have about 20,000 tenders above 500,000, and some of them are decentralized, like public works is per district. At the moment, we think open access is good, and let's start somewhere and reduce that threshold further and further. Also, this is only in Gauteng and Cape Town. Maybe we should expand it to other committees as well. At the moment, bid specifications, I don't think is open to the public. It's also an area that we think we could improve. The current system works like this. There's three committees. The specification committee agree on what is it that we buy, and they try to formulate the specification or terms of reference. The evaluation committee reviews functionality, and then the adjudication committee does the last part. But it's always a person that endorses. These committees only recommend. There's a post holder, a person that gets a salary, whose full-time job is to make sure this happens. And that person signs per his dedication in terms of that, and we need to hold that people available. How come that you allow that the wrong recommendations slip through the process? Actions and penalties. I'll quit, Jeffers, and I can hear you under pressure with time. There's penalties, sir. The general conditions of contracting with government, the special conditions of contracting allows for penalties. They're not enforced. It's not a legal provision issue. It is the will, the tenacity, and the thoroughness of the practitioner to do that. Why does that happen? The person that actually managed the contract is not a supply chain person. It's chief director for learning and teaching material. He sends an email to a supply chain person. They take care of the administration. But that project manager must say, listen, man, this is shoddy work. Bringing the legal person, bringing the supply chain person is going to cost you 10 million rand because you were late. Doesn't help us if the textbooks arrive in July. There's enough legal provisions. Some departments do it better than others. Consequences are not enough. Not for officials. I mentioned to you that, honorable member, there's 200,000 officials that got businesses on the side. It's wrong. If you're a public servant, then we must serve. It's not your business then to have a little shop on the side. Then go to KPMG or one of the others. We should just not tolerate that. The issue of public works, sir, is massive procurement operations. We are working with the department on reforms, practical things, how to procure smarter, easier access. Maintenance is a big issue. If a pipe burst, there's no time for three cuts. But you can put panels in place. You can target it to small black businesses in plumbing. We know there will be a pipe that burst. We don't need to wait for it and then start to try to do something. We can be much more proactive. I'm concluding, sir. Internal audit is vital as well as our controls. Budgetary controls, cost controls. And this starts with the budget, sir. Irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure often starts with the budget. So the numbers that we plug in the budget must be based on cost drivers. Cost accounting is a scientific way that I know this would cost probably 5 to 6 rand. And not the moment we finish the bid and then wonder should we pay 12 or 16 rand. It might happen in the bid already. It's on cost. We did an experiment that failed miserably. We developed this cost, references, or price referencing system, and we run it now for 6 months in 8 departments. So we took the basket from Stats SA, and I can tell you very accurately that the loaf of bread in the Capricorn district in Limpopo is 27 rand at state institutions. And that we pay 7 rand something in Naisna per district per ward all across the country. There's about 400,000 commodities that we have in the basket. But the Stats SA basket is not compliant to what government buys. Let me give an example. We often buy catering. The refreshments that we had this morning in the SCOA item is called catering. Stats SA classifies cheese, milk, yogurt, muesli, fruit. And fruit is apples, pears, and bananas. So when the procurement guy asked me now, I want to compare the prices. It's difficult to compare apples with apples. So the referencing system needs to be beefed up with at least another 10 million items before this becomes useful. Now that we've finished the portfolio analysis, it will be easy to identify the commodities that we use best. The e-commerce, there's four types of procurements we're going to do. Firstly, those centrally led procurements that the OCPO does for the whole of government. We call that transversal contracts. And there's only a limited number of commodities they can do. Commodities that work best for this is the high volume, low cost commodities like fuel and stationery and medical equipment and medicine. Then there's specialist commodities, and I think there's a good explanation of this on page 40, strategic sourcing. Medical oxygen. Currently there's two suppliers in the country that provide that. That's not something that a centrally led procurement system does well. It is too specialized. So when we have the roles of SLIC committees, evaluation committees and adjudication committees defined, still provide that a municipality or an entity or a department or a state-owned company should take care of the procurement type. But we insist that the benefits of centrally led procurements like SEPA with IT, Department of Health with pharmaceuticals and the National Treasury with its 40 transversal contracts as a specific place to play. Chairperson, your comments about the inefficiency and transformation observations is very valid. What does the Treasury do? We've met with DTI. We've got a plan for black industrial industrialization, SMMEs, youth employment, etc. We try to rally this with the economic cluster and to have it in practical, workable guidelines. Some of the frustrations of practitioners is that the guidance is too fluffy, it's almost implementable. So unless it is real and practical and you can put the business process in the IT system, then I think we will have this conversation again next year. I'm sorry that it's such a frank answer. We've had many examples of frameworks. Frameworks are very nebulous on the edges, and for a department with real delivery needs, practical rules and business processes at this stage of our developmental trajectory is probably the most appropriate. Inefficiency costs us much more than corruption. The time wasted in redoing the same thing two or three times, the time wasted to have it audited and checked, the time wasted to rectify mistakes in terms of hours spent by staff, by consultants, by overview committees, in my estimation, is probably three times what it is for corruption. I base this on a simple a sample we did for preparing this review. It's our estimation that we must automate processes that doesn't need too much human intervention. Secondly, where it affects business South Africa, that's the economic engine of South Africa. Government doesn't produce anything. We receive the money from Parliament and we spend it again. But the real economic value probably happens in the private sector, and therefore we envisage that the e-procurement system would have electronic interfaces with government that a person can see. My invoice was submitted electronically. It's currently in a three-way mapping between the order, delivery note, and the payment. It's on SCOP's desk for a release. It's now on the finance section. It's awaiting transfer in the bank. It's done everywhere in the world. There's no reason why we can't do it either. Save all those 30-day discussions, and there's visibility where it's going to come. Frustrations of suppliers is that they phone 20 people to try to find out where is my invoice, and that they feel totally frustrated if they submit it for the first time. corruption is an issue that we need to deal with without hesitation, as officials, as politicians, as Team South Africa. We are making good progress. The fact that incidents is in the media and it's commonly known as it's bad that it occurs, but it's good that it's transparent. I'm quite sure so we're going to make much better progress in this area. Are people taking us seriously? Yes, sir. We are taken seriously. It's got to do a lot with Kenna's management style. He believes it's better to deal with the issue quickly, without hesitation, than let it slumber. I hope that he will help us to have some of those skills so that one day when he retires, that is kind of standing operating procedure for the office. Chairperson, OCPO is 2 years in operation, but there is some practical things that's already materializing. There's lots more to come. It would be great if you can keep us on the straight and narrow, ask the tough questions that you do, and maybe we should report to you more often and on the issues that you believe is viable that, to make a progress.
All right. Well, I will allow comrades, but just in a minute before going to make time. Comrade Chula.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is based on the money that is spent in terms of the public infrastructure. As I asked the question earlier of the budget, when you go to page 27 of the document, is that we have 847 billion for over the next 2 years that is budgeted for the projects in South Africa. Now I don't know. Maybe I just want to get a clarity. When you also go to this presentation, you go to slide 14. Yeah, I think it's like slide 14 on the national.
The point is, otherwise we will not be able to reach every other person in the
country. I'm saying, can you refer to slide 40? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no talk. I'm just saying you are not shorter than what you said you would be. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, Chairperson. No, I was saying the budget of 847 billion, comparing it to the slide of slide 14, in terms of what the department, the infrastructure project that you talked about yesterday, our road infrastructure, dams, and where do you locate them in terms of the slide 14. And also that as a committee, when we do oversight in terms of finances of departments, how do you locate this money? That is why I asked that question firstly on in terms of the budget. How do you locate it? Or maybe it's the Office of AG that will be able to assist on that note. That's what I was trying to say.
Thank
you, Chairperson. Yeah. I will be very short. I find it very fantastic that the big departments like your health, education, and social development, which gets a chunk of money, they are not actually the big spenders of government, according to the graph that she's talking about. And I hope that as part of your deliberation, you'll try and make sure that the cooperatives are brought on board. And we should find, I think, together, Team South Africa, find ways to deal with monopoly in our country. But I also want to ask you to really check the road construction, because that's where money is spent, and we're not getting the value for money. We find that it's billions of funds spent there, and they charge excessive amounts, and nobody's checking that. Thanks.
Okay, what's your follow-up? Okay, just in short, Chairperson, we draw supply chain management. Could it be committee, or could you send it to the secretary for distribution? And then the implementation dates of the central slide database, could you just highlight those that we know, and also the e-commerce, when do we expect
to kickstart once again. Thank you.
There's one issue that was not properly answered, the mandate of the office.
What? Can we, in 5 minutes,
sure, yes, sir.
Respond to
the sanitation function, madam, was up to now part of the Department of Housing, and from the 1st of April transferred to the Department of Water. So if you look at this graph on page 14, you'll probably note that Water Affairs is still listed up to this date, only dealing with water. So the sanitation function has been moved. It would have been reported under Rural Development and Land Reform on the historical spend, but going forward, that's where we will find the money. The best test would be on the ENE, the Estimate of National Expenditures, plus the budget vote, and now when the committees report back in the reports to track the money. On health, the biggest spend item for health and education is the salary bill, the cost of the nurses, the staff, and the teachers. To give you an example, Department of Health in Limpopo has a 13 billion rand budget, 9.5 billion go for the salary bill, and the remaining 3.5 is for goods and services. So the slide that I presented is only the goods and services budget, the things that go through the procurement. It excludes the actual human resources. That's why it maybe looks at the numbers here are not telling. I've just included goods and services in this graph. The role of co-ops, we've definitely taken positive steps. The emergency procurement for the Sotho food program, we were able to buy 300 million rand of maize last year from small farmers and co-ops. There is also problems here. In Limpopo, there's 161 registered co-ops, but only 5 of them are actually operational. The others are registered, but there's nothing. So we have recently tried to buy food for a school nutrition program from those co-ops. From the 5 that's in that province operational, there's 2 in agriculture, 2 in crafts, beading, and baskets, and for the life of me, I can't remember the 5th one. So we've agreed with departments that there must be also support to keep going. It's not only registering a co-op and then tendering. You must actually produce something already. There's a good collaboration between us and the Department of Agriculture and DTI. Certainly, rural road construction and rural development, we will look a little bit into that. Copy of the bill can be made available. It's really draft. We have basically put something together, consulted with legal people, with provincial departments. It's still a long process before it will be really ready for public consultation. For your purposes, I think there would be no problem to make an advanced copy available, as long as you regard it still as a draft. The central supply database goes live on the 1st of September this year, and you can access it at www.csd.gov.za. It is available for all suppliers that want to self-register. Self-registration means a person with a smartphone or a computer. Then from the 1st of September 2015 to 31 March 2016, the assisted registration with CEDA, the post office, district offices, and Tuzong centers will be phased on so that on the 1st of April 2016 it is compulsory for departments to use. Chairperson, if I may forward communication to this department, we've got a fact sheet, information, we can even share with you some of the campaigns that's running. It's useful information that you might want to access. The e-commerce center is also going live on the 1st September 2015 for 3 contracts, the textile contracts, the fuel contract and a medical equipment contract. From the 1st of September to the rest of the year, we're also loading the 20 pharmaceutical contracts for medicines, and it will be all those transversal central lead contracts. And then lastly, the mandate of the OCPO, sir, I apologize, I think in the interest of time, skip over a few questions, is a description on page, where is it now? On page 13, the role of the OCPO is described, and if you'd like, I could also maybe email a more detailed write-up on the role of the OCPO.
I think also page 67.
That's right. Yeah, sorry, it's page 6 and 7 with a more detailed mandate of the OCPO. Is that okay, sir?
Yeah. Right, comrades, I think let's bring it to a close, and thanks, Carl, for sacrificing yesterday and not leaving and coming back to be with us. I think at this stage we are clear about the daunting task in front of us. When we talk to the Auditor General, there are so many issues, and supply chain management is just one item. Today, we focus on supply chain as an item on its own, and I think the levels of the challenges in front of us challenges us as a committee and as Parliament to really check up our act and act in a way that demonstrates that we have an emergency in our, you know, in our hands. How 500 billion times? I mean, that's a lot of money. But when you walk around, you see 500 billion. Can you say, here is 500 billion? I mean, I was in Limpopo when I came yesterday, and I was driving around. You can't say part of that 500 billion is somewhere there. So we have a responsibility in our hands as Parliament to ensure. National Treasury is a government that can only give us information. It's for us to act. It's for us to act. How do we ensure that you know, when officials come before us, there is a sense that there is a political vision or perspective that they, as administrators, are implementing. And not a diffuse sense where, you know, it's a free for all. People just do as they please, and there's no sense of directedness and purposiveness that we've seen and that we see in other countries of that kind of stuff. So, but anyway, I think thanks very much. It will be for us now as a committee to say how do we take these things forward, especially around maybe ensuring that on an annual basis. Just as National Treasury gives us a report on compliance with the FMA, then we specific on this one, on an annual basis. Do an audit, give us a report on the state of supply chain management. And no longer the generic level, but let's look at specific departments and entities that are worst performers. So we can call them and talk to them. And not talk it broad in general terms, that we're able to deal with specifics. Just like day-to-day payments that were agreed yesterday, National Treasury must, on a bi-monthly basis, give us a report so that we can hold those departments every second month. But why are you failing to fulfill your obligations in terms of this paying process? Maybe also what they need to assist us on is the issue of family doing business with government. They can also assist us on that. I think that one, comrades, will deal with it when we engage the Public Service Commission. I've already met with the Deputy Chairperson. This agreement, what is left is for us to agree on when we can have an engagement. You know. I also had an engagement with the Commissioner of SARS, because you see some companies here on the excellent certificates, they're given tenders. How do we involve and engage SARS? I think they are more than willing and happy to be tasked by us if once we have those kind of things. So I think we'll solve those.
things out in our own meetings. Once again, thanks very much. Thank you very much. Comrades, we're done.